As I said, I'm going to play two pieces by a colleague near FM's Donny Tarrant. First, he talked to local resident Yvonne Drysdale about the great Muhammad Ali, whose funeral takes place today. And then later on, about 10 to 12, we'll be playing a piece where Donny talked to Kenny Egan. But here's that first piece by Yvonne.
And joining us now in the studio is Yvonne Drysdale, familiar to you all from the Wednesday edition of Northside Today with John Healy. And Yvonne, you have a particular little story referring to somebody local in relation to Muhammad Ali.
That's right, Tony. One of the world's legendary sportsmen, the late Muhammad Ali, visited Ireland on three separate occasions during the course of his lifetime, stealing not only media headlines, but the heart of the Irish nation too. Ali's first visit to Ireland was in 1972, at the height of the Troubles, when he came to fight Alvin Blue Lewis in Croke Park. Although the fight is generally regarded as lackluster, with Ali winning on a technical knockout in the 11th round, one person who remembers the occasion well is Father Alex, now parish priest of St. Bridget's Church in Colchester, who entertained his parishioners recently with recollections of picking up the phone to find Muhammad Ali on the other end. "You're home from Rome. I wrote you a poem," he said. Ali then went on to arrange tickets for Father Alex to attend the fight, where he found himself rubbing shoulders in Ali's dressing room, with well-known celebrities such as the late Eamon Andrews. The fight was bankrolled to the tune of £300,000 by another legendary figure, Kerry publican and strongman Michael Bushy Sugrue. But a huge discrepancy between ticket sales and those in attendance at the fight meant Sugrue was another loser on the night, reportedly paying Ali's manager in beer-stained banknotes the next day. To add insult to injury, on the eve of the All-Ireland final between Kerry and Armagh in 2002, letters from Muhammad Ali pushed under the doors of the Armagh players are credited with motivation in inspiring them to beat the Kerry team. Some 30 years later, in 2003, Ali returned to Ireland to participate in the opening ceremony of the Special Olympics, taking a blow to the chin in good humour from another legendary figure, the late, great Nelson Mandela. But perhaps the most special visit of all was his last one in 2009, when the streets of Ennis, County Clare ran to the cheers of "Ali, Ali, Ali," visiting the birthplace of his great-grandfather, Abe Grady, who emigrated to the United States in the 1860s. The town claimed him as one of their own, making him an honorary Freeman of Ennis. This charismatic fighter and a man who inspired so many once said, "I won't miss boxing. Boxing will miss me. But the truth is, the world will miss you, Ali. So float like a butterfly, and until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand."
That is lovely, Yvonne. And of course, it has to be remembered that for those of you who don't know, that the tunnel between the Canal End and the Cusack Stand in Croke Park, the one which the Artane Boys band emerge from every time you see them, that is known officially as the Muhammad Ali Tunnel. Yvonne Drysdale, thank you so much for joining us on Northside Today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And now I'll hand you over to Donny now, who's talking to Kenny Egan.
Now, I'm delighted to welcome to Northside Today 10-time Irish heavyweight boxing champion and Olympic medal winner, Kenneth Egan. Ken, you're very welcome to Northside Today. A sad day. The man who once proclaimed to be the greatest, and I think everybody has agreed, went on to prove it, is being laid to rest today.
Yeah, it's a sad day for everyone, you know. Everyone involved in the sport of boxing and entirely across the world. A legend has passed in Muhammad Ali. He actually retired in 1981. I was born in 82, so I didn't actually get to see him fight live. But, you know, my father spoke about him on many occasions, about his movement and his jab and just his personality, you know. And I think that's what set him apart from everyone else. It was his personality and his belief in himself. It was just fantastic to listen to him and hear him rant off his riddles and his raps and his rhymes. It was a pleasure, and he really put the spotlight on boxing, and especially when the media was only really starting to come to its own, he really took advantage of that and he used it to his advantage, and he just became the legend.
Would it be fair to say, Kenneth, and like, I am that little bit older than you, and I remember him now. In fairness, when I say I remember him, he was probably coming to the end of his power at that stage, and I mean, I think it's pretty well generally accepted by everybody now that he probably went on for maybe a year or two or maybe more longer than he should have, but that's a discussion for another day. Would it be fair to say, Kenneth, from what you've seen of him, and I mean, you would be a student of boxing and an expert when it comes to it, that he actually changed boxing completely from the style that was there before to what he introduced when he stepped into the ring?
It's true what you say, Danny, because even before Ali turned up, you know, the heavyweights were just sluggish. They were big, they were strong, and they stood toe-to-toe, you know. With Muhammad Ali, he came up onto his toes, 15 and a half, 16 stone of a man, dancing around the ring for 12 rounds. Never heard of. And still to this day, we don't see heavyweights doing what he has done in the past. You know, the way he got up on his toes, he was moving, he was jabbing. You know, he was just the perfect fighter. And like I said, for heavyweight, for him to move the way he did for 12 rounds just showed his conditioning and his sheer ability.
Yeah, and what's the other side of it as well is that, you know, it was kind of, and I don't mean this in a derogatory fashion, but it was sort of maybe a little bit easy for him in the beginning because people weren't used to it. But even throughout his career, when they knew what his style was, very hard to combat it because, as you say, it was two big bruisers walked out of the corner and stood toe-to-toe and whoever could throw the biggest punch generally won, whereas this fella arrived and he had it all. He could move, he could give a punch, but by God, he proved that he could take one as well.
Yeah, and that was it. I suppose that's the beauty of Muhammad Ali. He could give and he could take. Maybe he took a bit too much in the end of his career, you know, but a lot of people are forgetting that he won Olympic gold in 1960 as well. So he was a fairly good amateur as well, you know.
Bit before my time. I will say that much. That one was before my time. But I mean, it goes back again, Kenneth, to what you said, and you know, it's proof of the and as a testimony to the man that he stood by his principles to the extent that he risked imprisonment and was stripped of his titles and his medals because of his beliefs in which is, I suppose, a strange thing in a way for a man who was making his living out of boxing, that he didn't believe in gratuitous violence.
And isn't it amazing how he did stand his ground, you know, in America of all places, you know? And he didn't just go by the book. He went against it, you know, and he wrote his own rules and he talked his own talk and he walked his own walk. And that's the beauty of Muhammad Ali. He wasn't a yes man. He did things his way. And unfortunately, the 3.5 years that he was out of the sport, I suppose, could have been his best 3.5 years. But unfortunately, he had to take a step back. And he stood his ground. And fair play to him, you know. It was just unfortunate that it was a stunt in his career. But this is a man that an awful lot of people look up to, you know. And the time he gave, I believe, when you're hearing stories, the time he gave to people when they turned up to his gym and he'd sign autographs for hours. This was a good man, you know. He loved people, he loved the sport, he loved making people laugh and engaging with people. And that's what sport's about.
Yeah, he was...
Having kids to look up to someone and say, I want to be like that guy. That's what it's about.
Yeah, he definitely was an unbelievable role model, and he definitely was a genuine, real, nice human being. And it's sad that today we pay our final respects to him as he's laid to rest. Kenneth, I suppose this is an impossible question for you to answer, but do you think that anybody will ever come again that will have the effect on the boxing world or even the sporting world that Muhammad Ali has had in his time?
To be honest with you, if you look back, you know, and you say, if you took Muhammad Ali and dropped him out of an airplane anywhere in the world, people would know who he was, you know. He was that much of a legend. And the way he spoke, the way he fought, the way he predicted rounds, he was just an all-around perfect human being, you know. And will there be anyone like him again? I don't think so, you know. There was only one Muhammad Ali, and may he rest in peace now. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of lads up there now trying to emulate Muhammad Ali and be as good as him and talk the talk. But Muhammad Ali was unique, I think. And you know, it's okay for him to be the man of all men, you know.
Kenneth Egan, thank you so much for joining us on Northside today. I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much for having me, Donnie. Good man. And,